Good afternoon, everyone. I know it's warm out here, and but we all know this is what we expect this time of year, and especially in this afternoon class, but hopefully this subject, being as interesting as it is, we can keep our minds focused on it. The book of Daniel is a good example of something very interesting. As we've seen, these first three chapters we have already discussed. In chapter 4, the events spoken of would have taken place a lot later in Nebuchadnezzar's reign than those of chapters 2 and 3. We find that the first three verses really belong at the end of this chapter 4, as they seem to be a prologue to the royal narration that follows. We see that all the huge building projects that Nebuchadnezzar had undertaken would now be completed, that he is well established in his power. And we also see the experiences that he faces bring him to the realization that it is not he that is in control of all things, but God. We start in verse 3. His kingdom is an everlasting kingdom, and all his dominion is from generation to generation. These are two fundamental truths that were made clear to Nebuchadnezzar in his dream. The earth will be inhabited, and God's kingdom will last forever. When we look around at the so-called Christian world today, we find that most do not believe this. Verse 4 sets the scene where we see his state of mind when he had the dream. We read, "I, Nebuchadnezzar, was at rest in mine house and flourishing in my palace." In short, he was content with his life and ways and is now more secure in his reign. He ruled over all the inhabited earth. His military campaigns that he conducted in Syria, Phoenicia, Arabia, Egypt, and elsewhere were completed. From the natural standpoint, he was the greatest ruler the world had ever seen. This picture of himself shows us that there was a considerable amount of time between the vision in chapter 2 of the image, which he had obviously forgotten the interpretation of, and this dream of the tree in chapter 4. Let's look at verse 5. He says he saw a dream which made him afraid. Now, when you think of this, you might ask yourself, why would he be afraid? After all, he was the ruler over the world. Well, it might have been because of the nature of the dream. It probably caused him to stop and consider previous incidents of what had happened to him. He, as a ruler, would rather not admit this, but he is probably beginning to realize that this dream could be a message from the one and only God who is in charge of all affairs. This message concerned him as he considered the effects it would have on him and his kingdom. So Nebuchadnezzar makes a decree or a decision to bring in the wise men of Babylon to consider the dream. Unlike the first one, where he didn't give any information to the wise men about the dream, this time he gives them all the details. We see Daniel is not brought in at first, even though he is considered the master of the magicians. Why? Most likely because Nebuchadnezzar thought this dream would easily be interpreted. It could also be from God, that in that God would be glorified through Daniel when he was called to explain the dream. It would show that something more than mere human intellect would be needed to show the meaning of the dream. Daniel would pray to God to help him understand it. We see in verse 8, Nebuchadnezzar calls in Daniel, whose name is Belteshazzar. Nebuchadnezzar's pagan gods played a role in his belief system, and he wanted to honor his gods above the God of heaven. That's why he changed Daniel's name to Belteshazzar, and he says, "According to the name of my God." This is the mind of the flesh in the natural state, trying to give credit to some inanimate object rather than giving credit to God in heaven, who is in control of everything. From verse 9, we see that Daniel was promoted up in the affairs of Babylon. He had the position above the magicians, and as such, would have some influence with the revelation given him from Yahweh. Nebuchadnezzar knew that Daniel could interpret the dream. problem was that he was so confident in his own ability to conquer the world by his own power, rather than recognizing that the God of in heaven rules in the kingdom of men. It seems like the end of verse 9, that he went to Daniel to have him explain the dream and the interpretation, like he had to in chapter 2, because he says, "Tell me the visions of the dream that I have seen, and the interpretation thereof." But if we look in the RSV, it says, "Here is the dream with the purpose of obtaining interpretation thereof." And the Authorized Version says, "Tell me the meaning of the vision." It would appear that the last half of the verse is a poor translation from the original. Moving on to verse 10, Nebuchadnezzar tells Daniel the dream. He saw a tree in the midst of the earth, and the height thereof was great. This dream concerns Nebuchadnezzar himself and what was about to happen to him, and like Daniel's other prophecies, it had more than one meaning. The tree was representative of Babylon. Trees are commonly used to represent nations. One quick example is found in Ezekiel chapter 31, verse 3. "Behold, the Assyrian was a cedar in Lebanon, with fair branches, and with a shadowing shroud of an high stature." We see in verse 11, the tree grew and was strong. This is talking about the growth and strength of Babylon, and the height thereof reached unto heaven, showing the scope and power of its rule, to the end of the earth, showing Babylon's rule extended throughout the whole then known world. "The leaves thereof were fair, and the fruit much, and it was meat for all." This whole description is describing the Babylonish Empire in its full glory and promoting the desire of Nebuchadnezzar to rule the world, as we see from Isaiah chapter 14, verse 13. "For thou hast said in thine heart, I will ascend into heaven. I will exalt my throne above the stars of God. I will sit also upon the mount of the congregation in the sides of the north." Nebuchadnezzar was headstrong and with a lot of pride. The end of verse 12, "The beast of the field had shadow under it. The fowls of the heaven dwelt in the branches, and all flesh was fed of it." This was representing all the conquered nations, and that their existence depended on the goodwill of the king of Babylon. Nebuchadnezzar has the full picture of the tree in the midst with all its glory, and then he sees an angel come down from heaven. Verse 13 says, "A watcher and an holy one." It should be a watcher, even an holy one. A watcher is one who is awake and vigilant. Holy One describes his character. The angel do God's work. Nebuchadnezzar, in effect, was realizing that the affairs on earth are watched over by the angels in heaven. Nothing of God's plan is left to chance. An angel commands the tree to be cut down. This would represent the cutting off of the Babylonian power and influence. Nebuchadnezzar would be reminded that he was warned of them in his dream of the image in Daniel chapter 2, verse 37. God gives him a kingdom, power and strength and glory, so that, though he does not realize it, he would be subject to Yahweh. Therefore, when the time comes, he could easily remove him from power. God is in control over all nations. Paul tells us in Acts chapter 17, verse 26, "And hath made of one blood all nations of men for to dwell on all the face of the earth, and hath determined the time before appointed and the bounds of their habitation." The question is, when was the tree cut down? We get a good explanation from Dr. Thomas in the book Exposition to Daniel. I'm just going to quote a short piece here on calling the four-headed leopard faces. He says, "The third symbol representative of the kingdom of Babylon under a new constitution shown to Daniel was a leopard with four heads and four wings. It answers to the brazen part of the image, which bore rule over all the earth, and to the goat with four horns pointing to the four winds in the eighth chapter, but without the little horn, which is represented by the fourth beast. The leopard is Macedonian, representing Alexander the Great's dominion and those of his four principal successors who divided among themselves. The body of the beast represents the power before it was divided, and each one, and each head, one of the subsequent divisions. The wings represented the position of the Macedonian heads relative to the Holy Land. At the death of Alexander, a long period of war ensued, which resulted in B.C. 301 in the establishment of the following kingdoms on the territory of the Kingdom of Men. I won't go through the four heads, except for the third head, which concerning Babylon. It says the third head, the kingdom of the northeast, comprehending the rest of Asia, inclusive of Babylon and its province, and extending beyond the Euphrates to the Indus. India, beyond that river, though allotted to this head, revolted so that the Indus became its boundary. This was the Macedo-Babylonish kingdom of the Seleucids. The lion man, the bear, the leopard, and its third head, or kingdom of the north, all established themselves in the city of Babylon, where Alexander held, as it were, the States General of the world, in which he had resolved to make the throne of his empire. But the decree of heaven was against the city. The purpose of Alexander was frustrated by death, and by B.C. 293 it became an uninhabited desert by the inundation of the Euphrates and the building of Seleucia on the banks of the Tigris about 40 miles above, to which the citizens removed. Thus the tree of Babylon was hewn down and its branches lopped, its leaves shaken off, and its fruit scattered, so that the nations got away from under it and their rulers from its branches. Nevertheless, the stump of its roots remained under the sovereignty of the third head of the leopard, founded by Seleucus, for almost 250 years, when the iron and brass became one dominion in Asia by the annexation of the Macedo-Babylonish territory to the Roman. And the band, being thus formed, it was found at length encircled by it, B.C. 65. End quote. Now going on to the 15th verse of this fourth chapter of Daniel, the vision now brings Nebuchadnezzar into focus and the punishment he was to receive for not recognizing that Yah rules the kingdom of men. His heart would be changed to a beast heart. This was a very humbling wake-up call for Nebuchadnezzar. So from a personal point of view, for Nebuchadnezzar, the tree cut down would represent him being taken from power and sent out into the field to eat grass as an ox for 7 years or 2,520 days. In Daniel's interpretation in verse 26, he says, "And whereas they commanded to leave the stump of the tree roots, the kingdom shall be sure unto thee." In other words, after living as a beast of the field for a while, he would return to his throne as head of Babylon. At this point, Nebuchadnezzar would have no doubt that Yah is the one that really is in control. Before Daniel gave the interpretation to the king, it says he was astonished for 1 hour. Daniel had been in a high position for quite a while in Babylon. He realized the scope of the dream and the overall meaning was going to take place over a long period of time. The tree represented the Babylonian Empire and its strength and glory. Nebuchadnezzar had extended the kingdom to the then known world, and all the nations were subject to him. He was in control of all the people, and this is what caused him to become very arrogant and proud. He had made the city of Babylon very beautiful. From the typical sense, the 7 times to pass over before he was humbled represented a period of 2,520 years. A time, from the Jewish standpoint, is 360 days, or 1 year. So 7 times 360 is 2,520 years. Now Nebuchadnezzar first invaded Jerusalem B.C. 606 to 603. If you add the 2,520 years, it ends up at 1914 to 1917. And this was the period of World War I and resulted in the Turks being driven from Jerusalem, and the way for the Jews to return to Jerusalem was in the works with the signing of the Balfour Declaration. In closing, I'd like to quote from an article that Brother Grocott wrote in Be Transformed, and it's his take on Daniel chapter 4, and I thought it was quite appropriate. He says, Daniel chapter 4 gives the dream of the cut-down tree and the seven-year madness of Nebuchadnezzar that was represented by it. Nebuchadnezzar reigned 43 years, from 605 to 562 B.C. His madness would appear to be sometime after the final destruction of Jerusalem in 586 B.C., as the scriptural records represent him as the active ruler of Babylon during their period of the wars against Judah and the surrounding nations. Also, his boast, "Is not this Babylon which I have built?" would appear to be uttered after a considerable period of building and development of power. Babylon was the head of the image that represented the kingdom of men, so there is a special significance in what was divinely caused to happen to her and her ruler. The vision appears to have a threefold significance. First, to Nebuchadnezzar himself, the seven-year in the field. Second, to Babylon, 70-year rule. Third, to the kingdom of men as a whole, 7 times 360 years. Its immediate and typical fulfillment was in Nebuchadnezzar. Just 1 year later, in the midst of his pride, he was divinely struck with madness, and for 7 years roamed the fields like an animal and ate grass. But the full scope of the vision is obviously greater than this, as further indicated by the binding of the stump of the tree with a band of iron and brass. The constitution of the kingdom of men since the fall of the Babylonian Empire is just as pictured here. The Babylonian stump bound with a band of Roman iron and Grecian brass. All in any way familiar with history are aware that our present-day civilization is principally bound by the customs, principles, and heritage of Greece and Rome in language, government, philosophy, art, architecture, law, science, literature, etc. There are fewer who recognize the basic Babylonian fleshly and religious stump. But students of God's Word know that the modern religious world is fundamentally Babylonian, and that Babylon the Great, the mother of harlots and abominations of the earth, is the title the scriptures give to this system. Such documentary books as Hyslop's Two Babylons expose the pagan Babylonian origin of the world's principal religious observances and traditions and festivals as Christmas, Easter, Halloween, etc. God's people can have nothing to do with such Babylonian corruption. And let's 7 times pass over it. 7 times in scriptural symbol amount on the larger scale is 7 times 360 years, or 2,520 years. The significance of this lies in the fact that our day, which we know from world conditions, is the time of the end, lies just this length of time from the period of the Babylonian Empire. 7 times measured from the beginning of the head of gold comes to 1914. 7 times from the end of Babylon, about 1984. This is the 70 years of Babylon carried forward 7 times, or 2,520 years. Runs from 1914 to 1984. At the end of his madness, Nebuchadnezzar, typifying the kingdom of men, cured from its present delusions and brought to the true knowledge and worship of God, declares, "All the inhabitants of the earth are reputed as nothing, and he doeth according to his will in the army of heaven and among the inhabitants of the earth, and none can stay his hand or say unto him, What doest thou?" This is the great value of Daniel for us today. The great truth we must keep before our minds as we watch the futile maneuverings of the sin powers of the earth, as the final crisis approaches, even of proud and terrible Gog himself. God says, "I'll turn thee back, and I'll bring thee forth." Russia is merely fulfilling God's will and preparing the scene for the manifestation of God's glory.
Thank you, Brother Jim. Very interesting. We'll now open the class for any discussions and comments further to Jim's remarks. Brother David?
Brother Jim, in his comments this morning, or this afternoon, brought out the point of verse 8, how that Daniel was brought in after everybody else. And, you know, it just goes to show Nebuchadnezzar's pride. Although Daniel and Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego's God had proven that he truly was the God, yet Nebuchadnezzar gives his people every chance that they can get to prove themselves against that God. And you know, so you see it, and I think it's again in the fifth chapter. He does the same thing. He's constantly calling in his own men, and as a last resort, goes to God. And we see that's the worldly way of thinking. If we think that we can just go to God as a last resort, God's not going to be there for us. We have to have the mentality of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, as was brought out in the exhortation, that it's a constant way of thinking. So when we do hit the trials, that we're prepared and ready for those trials.
I'd like to thank Brother Jim for the additional thoughts he's brought forward for us to consider in the book of Daniel. And I was thinking that when Brother Jim, you made reference to this Babylonian tree cut down and bound with iron and brass. We know that the elements iron and brass immediately link us to the brass, the belly and thighs of brass and the legs of iron in Daniel chapter 2. So we've got the issue of the Greek element and the Roman element still with us in the consideration of the prophecy of Daniel. And I think the great lesson that we see here is the fact that although the tree of Babylon was cut down, its stumps were still there, so that it still existed. One of the brethren earlier on today made reference to the power and the dominion of Babylon. It was a mighty kingdom in its own right. It was an empire. It was the head of gold. It was a wealthy empire. And yet we know it was cut down, and we know we to hear a little bit more about that in our next session. It was cut down, and it was a huge political religious system, and the religious element is as important as the political element. Babylon was a religious system, and one of the other brethren during the course of our studies made reference, or might have been Jim, Babylon, Mystery Babylon, and a book that's been written on it, indicating the fact that ancient Babylon was a religion in its own right, yet it was cut down, yet its influence has remained. And I think this is what is being taught to us here in this particular fourth chapter, amongst other things, that the influence of Babylon remains, but bound with iron and brass, which again is in significant, because two of the great Christian religions of the world are the Roman Catholic religion and the Greek Orthodox. They're very similar, but they have some specific differences as well. When the church divided, I think it was around about 1000 AD, I think, I can't remember exactly now. But the influence of Babylon then is contained within these two great false Christian systems, Rome being represented by the iron element and the Greek Orthodox by the Greek, the brass element. So we actually see that the influence of Babylon is existing right down to our own days in these great religious systems. And obviously one of the brethren commented that just how the book of Revelation actually takes up some of these principles and discusses the system of Roman Catholicism and she has been a great persecutor of God's people. So it's quite interesting for us to consider these things and actually to be on our guard that we don't become intoxicated, as it were, with the teachings of these religious systems, that we hold fast and have a clear perception of what this is being taught us. I think it was Brother David Somerville made reference yesterday to the fact that, you know, we do need to study the books of Daniel and the book of the Apocalypse so that we are not duped by the religious systems. Central has got all sorts of expositions on the book of the Apocalypse and things like this, and it's because they fail to understand the basic principles as expounded by Brother Thomas and supported by Brother Roberts. And here in the book of Daniel we have the foundation stone of some of these teachings.
Brother Ben?
Just to make a comparison, I guess, a small comparison, we have in verse 31, while the word was yet in the king's mouth, there fell a voice from heaven saying, O King Nebuchadnezzar, to thee it is spoken, the kingdom is departed from thee. And just reading that, it reminded me of 1 Samuel chapter 15 that we read not too long ago, with the case of Saul. And we have Samuel saying to Saul, when thou wast little in thine own sight, wast thou not made head over the tribes of Israel, and the Lord anointed thee king over Israel? Because thou hast rejected the word of the Lord, he has also rejected thee from being king. We see in both instances that they were rejected for their pride, and for in the case of Saul, where he was hiding among the people. He didn't want to be taking on this position, and he came to the point where he was doing the things that he should not have been doing. And Nebuchadnezzar, now, as Brother Jim pointed out, many years later in his reign having been established, his pride yet again brought up after having ruled and established the greatness of Babylon. And we just see how quickly God can take these things away if it's not to be, then he will take it away. Of course, in the case of Nebuchadnezzar returns after the seven times pass over him, whereas Saul, we know he is ultimately killed.
Brother David?
Brothers and sisters, in light of what Ben had just said, it's very interesting that here you have this pagan king writing these things and the lessons he had learned from the God of heaven, that he rules in the Most High rules in the kingdoms of men and gives it to whomsoever he will, and does according to his will in the army of heaven. But it's interesting that the last thing he says here at the end of this chapter, he says, Now I, Nebuchadnezzar, praise and extol and honor the King of heaven, acknowledging, first of all, that Yahweh is the King of heaven, all whose works are truth, and his ways judgment. And those that walk in pride, he is able to abase. He knew this experimentally because of the fiery furnace. He knew of it because of the seven times that had passed over him and what had befallen him as he had the heart of a beast, ate grass like the oxen, and his nails grew as bird's claws or eagle's claws. So we see that he had learned experimentally that those that walk in pride he is able to abase. And God is working in the kingdoms of men. Eventually the earth will be filled with his glory. All nations shall know, love, serve, and obey him. We're told that if a nation or a kingdom doesn't serve Israel and serve the Lord, that nation will have the plague wherewith God smites it. Or the nation that gets no rain, such as Egypt, they shall have the plague whereby they shall be smitten. But the other lands that get rain will have rain withheld them. We're told that the days come that all shall know him, from the least unto the greatest. Eventually, men will marvel at the ignorance that was in those who went before in past ages. But the age that's coming will be such a glorious age of light and emancipation from the veil of gross darkness that's upon the nations now. It'll be evident that God will have taught the nations and will have broken the pride of man. The pride of man is part of the basic thing that God hates and detests the most, because it is the fruit of sin. The wages of sin is death. So man has much to learn, but in this confession that Nebuchadnezzar makes, in this writing, and it's doubtless why it's preserved in Scripture, he is really honoring and glorifying the God of heaven to some extent. He still had this other pantheon of gods that he worshipped, so his knowledge was very limited. It was only partial, but it was a vast improvement over, say, Cush and Nimrod and those guys. You know, he had learned to some extent of the God of heaven.
Followed by Brother Steve.
Just to combine a little bit about what Brother David and Brother Philip said, Brother Philip brought out about the churches, and men are feeding on that foolishness. I mean, the whole world is being led and fed by that type of foolishness. And when you look at what happened to Nebuchadnezzar, he made himself great, just as the churches of the world has done, and he was brought low, literally, as the and if you look at the end, as Brother David pointed out, he's extolling the beauties and the wonders of God, and he was brought low for seven times. Well, at the end of seven times, all the earth is going to glory in the Lord. And as David was pointing out, at the end of seven times, all men are going to go to Jerusalem, and they're going to say, "Surely our fathers have inherited lies." And the beauty of the type that's before us just shows so much of how the foolishness of man in creating his own religion and creating his own world and going against what God has set up is going to be brought to what God wants in the final consolation.
Carrying on with what Brother Dave brought out about the humbling of Nebuchadnezzar and him growing eagle's wings, eagle's feathers and claws. I've heard it said, and I don't know if it's true, maybe the medical field amongst us would know if there is such a resembling disease. But it's interesting that if we go back 150 or so years to the prophet Isaiah, we have in chapter 13 of Isaiah, verse 17, "Behold, I will stir up the Medes against them, Babylon." And it's talking of the fall of Babylon. I know we're going to go into this tomorrow, but it's interesting that what happened to Nebuchadnezzar was almost like a prophecy within a prophecy. We're told that the wild beasts would not dwell there in Babylon. And it's interesting that Nebuchadnezzar himself became one of these wild beasts. And we know that as we go into the next chapter in Isaiah, in this prophecy, that he would be this Lucifer, this bright star that would fall, this bright gold image, this radiant gold head of the statue.
Brother Jim?
Brother Chairman, brethren and sisters, this chapter, like so many others in the scriptures, needs to be read with bifocals on. The immediate chapter is dealing with Nebuchadnezzar, a literal 7 years, him losing his kingdom, but has been pointed out, it also contains a long-term prophecy of Babylonian system that will be banded with the brass and the iron, the stump left in the earth, which we see today, the Babylonian system still contained in the Greek and Roman religious systems. So we see the twofold aspect of it. Now, the interesting thing is what Daniel said. The conclusion is that the thing is sure, the decree is by the watchers, which to my mind tells me that the watchers, the angels, were observing Nebuchadnezzar and came to the decision something had to be done about this. And so the decision was, we're going to bind him as a beast for 7 times or 7 years. And yet Daniel told Nebuchadnezzar, he was very upset with this, because obviously he had established a relationship over the years with Nebuchadnezzar. As Jim pointed out, this is later on in Nebuchadnezzar's reign. And he told Nebuchadnezzar to change his way, change his attitude, change his heart. It may be a lengthening of thy tranquility. It may be that God will see the change and not do this to you. In a way, it's kind of hard for us to understand. If the angel's decree was this is what's going to happen, then how could it not happen? But we know God does work with us if we work with him. And God has modified the thing that he said, not the end result, but the immediate happening because of the plea of an individual. But when we look at the long picture, we see the exact same thing today with the churches. They are godless. They have established humanism as their God. They have decided politically this is what it's going to take to get the nations to come back to the church. If you keep teaching about this authoritative God in the Bible, they're not going to listen to us. But if we can establish our moral authority that we speak as God, then people will listen to us. And once again, is not this great Babylon that I have built? They are doing the exact same thing that Nebuchadnezzar did, and therefore will get the exact same results. So even though God would be willing to work with them, we see their stubbornness, we see the pride of their heart, even as it was with Nebuchadnezzar, and so therefore it's got to be this way, and it will be this way. And the whole system will be toppled and done away with.
I ought to have checked beforehand. Brother Ben, what time does this class finish? Now. maybe we can make time for one more comment if anyone has any. If not, just thought a nice verse to finish on was in Isaiah 2, verse 17, where it says, "And the loftiness of man shall be bowed down, and the haughtiness of men shall be made low, and Yahweh alone shall be exalted in that day." I guess that's the day we hope all to be partaken in.